sitting.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, before we went to break, we were talking about restaurants. And just so happened, this is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today. And it says State Watch. This is The Hill. Restaurants face new challenges to survive after key legislation stalls. Restaurants that struggle to survive the pandemic are now worried they could close their doors for good after the Senate effectively killed legislation that would have provided more funding. The Senate in May failed to advance the Small Business COVID Relief Act, which included $40 billion to refill the restaurant's revitalization fund set up by a separate relief bill in 2021. Restaurants argued the new money was necessary because nearly 177,000 restaurants that applied for funding were left out of the $28 billion in grants sent to just 105,000 restaurants. Now those restaurants have little hope of getting additional funding from Washington, where Republicans in the House and Senate are skeptical of additional relief money. They say much of what has already been authorized by Washington has yet to be spent, and they are not in favor of providing more taxpayer money at a time of rising inflation. So, Sandy, so the restaurants grew accustomed to receiving these ARPA funds. And because, like you were talking about during COVID, people weren't coming to restaurants. Restaurants had overhead. They couldn't just stop. And so they were receiving some assistance from the federal government. Federal government is cutting that off. And restaurants are saying, we can't survive without it. What's supposed to happen?
Well, you know, restaurants in Europe, the business model for lots of things is going to change. And I think the waitstaff industry, the people who work in service in restaurants, the kitchen staff, the wait staff in Europe, those people are all professionals. Now, in this country, the kitchen staff aren't based on tips, or at least they mostly aren't. I think in some restaurants they even share tips, but tipping is the way that the business model in the United States, minimum wage, or even in some states you can pay less than minimum wage to employees that rely on tips, and then tipping is the way they make money. So you don't make any money at all if people don't come in, and a business model in the United States has long been that wait staff is not a lifelong career. It's not something you can rely on the money for. It's something you do while you're going to school or while you're starting out or while you're trying to be an actor in Hollywood or whatever the deal is. In Europe, wait staff is professional. People don't expect to get tipped. They earn salaries. They work for long periods of time. They're the face of the restaurant. They have a lot to do with the reputation of the restaurant and the style of service. And you can notice that when you travel. And that's the model that's transitioning to in the United States, because wait staff, restaurants are currently having trouble, not because there aren't people ready to come to the restaurant. It's because there's nobody ready to work in the restaurant. Right. And when you go to the restaurant, you get poor service. And they have to apologize to you, or there aren't enough workers, and there's a sign on the door saying we have to close Sunday and Monday for want of staff. And so the business model is changing, and it's much like the business model for automobile dealerships. It's like the business model for real estate commercial space. It's all part of this evolution in the marketplace.
So why aren't restaurants then pushing for immigration? Because that's going to be where their access to employees.
Well, I'm not sure they aren't pushing for immigration. I mean, I suspect that those industries that most rely on the kind of population that's willing to commit themselves to working full time in those kinds of jobs are wanting more immigration. It's the tribalism is being driven by portions of the population that I don't clearly identify.
So Sandy, I guess I we're going to lose a swath of restaurants. I mean,
well, restaurants have a, you know, the half-life of a restaurant isn't very long. It's a little bit like bars. You know, there are some bars that last for a very long time, and there are some restaurants that last for a very long time, and those are the ones we think of, but they're relatively rare in the industry, and they always have been. And particularly for the last 40 or 50 years.
You know, Sandy, I want to go to now the unprecedented, and this is an article in Global Pulse, 3 reasons for unprecedented world hunger. You started talking about famine a while back, and here in our country, it's hard for us to even fathom, you know, famine.
Yeah.
Even people who struggle economically, there's always enough food in America, right? We throw food away. We throw away enough food to feed the world on a daily basis, restaurants and all those other things. The global famine is real, the threat of global famine, and it's going to be here in the twinkling of an eye.
Well, I mean, the shortage of food, when you look at, for instance, Egypt and some of the countries that rely on the wheat that comes out of Ukraine and Russia, and the impending shortage of wheat will have dire consequences, because in the diets of those people, wheat is a very important source of the nutrition that they rely on to live. And we can remember back in the days when Ethiopia
you see it on television all the time.
Children and adults dying of famine in Ethiopia. I mean, we as Americans don't realize the fragile edge that many people live on with respect to just getting subsistence and getting food. And can that happen in America?
No, I know it's not going to happen in America, but the fact that it's going to happen even more so globally, we had turned a corner on that.
Well, and we should understand that when that happens, the people who have the alternative of leaving where they live or starving to death will definitely opt for the option of leaving where they live. So the amount of emigration that will occur, you know, we've already seen it. When there's warfare in a country, many people have to pack their bags, the 2 bags they have with the only possessions they have. They get to carry those bags, and they leave, and they go to Europe, or they come to the United States. And so some of the social disruption that we've experienced in the world has been the very result of immigration from the emigrants who are leaving troubled places. The Syrian emigration had caused a material impact in Europe in terms of social upset. It also affected the politics there and drove some of those countries to the right as the population began to take on the political issue of resisting immigration and changing immigration laws. And doesn't that sound familiar?
So we as the great United States, during those times of famine, were the ones who were able to come to the rescue of the world and feed the world. I don't know, and based on what's happening now in Ukraine,
we're not going
to be able to do that.
Well, we'd like to say we did that, but we weren't able to save all those Ethiopians, and there's been Somalians, and there's been a bunch of countries that have experienced terrible famine that even the United Nations and the rest of the world trying to assist still allowed hundreds of thousands of people to die of hunger.
Yeah, but that hasn't been for a while. Looks like that's going to be on the docket soon, based on, and who would have thought that what is happening in Ukraine would be at the root of all of that? I mean, we can watch.
Well, that's just because we forget, because World War II caused, you know, the people talk about and are in wonder of, and it's horrible to think that 26 million Russians died during World War II. Many of those people died of typhus and of hunger and of things that were caused by warfare, but they didn't die of bullets. Okay, and there are many more fatalities that come out of major wars that relate to the collateral effects of the war than from actual shrapnel and bullets.
You know, it's you see it's coming. the United Nations itself can't do much to prevent it. It doesn't have the structure or the infrastructure to deal with it. You know, our nation is
Well, some of the problems for solving the problem of, for instance, hunger in Africa is simply the transportation of food. I mean, the problem right now for getting the wheat from Ukraine to Africa involves ships.
Yeah.
And the ability to move the ships. Yes.
Yeah.
And part of the whole the parts crisis we have in the supply chain in the United States relates to ships and the ability to load them and unload them at docks. And if we're going to be shipping food to starving places, we're going to have to load and unload them at docks, much the way we have to load and unload parts in our supply chain, which we aren't able to do. So a lot of the infrastructure problems we're currently experiencing will get in the way of our ability to solve problems like world hunger.
You know, Sandy, all of these things, you always say they're complex. That's because they really are.
Yeah.
None of it is easy.
I use the analogy, I can't remember if it's Wednesday or whenever, but about the broken watch.
Yeah.
That's really, when you think about complexity, I remember when I was a kid, my mother one day, to keep me busy, gave me a watch from my father had that was broken and said, here, take it apart and put it back together again. I took it apart real quickly.
Yeah.
It never got put back together.
Yeah, well, you know, number one, you know, you got to have the right tools.
Well, and it's complicated.
And yeah.
That was the first time I realized complexity. I got that watch apart, or I opened it up, and I looked at it, and I thought, ooh, this looks complicated.
You got to go to a break, 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams in the studio. We'll be right back.